I'm Andrew Schwartz, and you're listening to The Truth of the Matter, a podcast by CSIS where we break down the top policy issues of the day and talk with the people that can help us best understand what's really going on. To get to the truth of the matter about the latest trends in foreign policy, national security, we have with us Mark Penn, chairman and CEO of Stagwell, former pollster for Bill and Hillary Clinton, many other things, including Burson's CEO, leadership team at Microsoft. And Mark, welcome to the podcast. He's actually, I should say, the reason he's here today is he's the CEO of the Harvard Caps Harris Poll. And we're going to talk about some of these trends. So Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So Mark, tell me about some of the national security trends that you saw in your February poll. The results on Israel and Hamas may surprise some people.
Oh, first, let me just tell you that when it comes to foreign policy, as much as foreign policy can dominate the headlines in the news right now, when I ask people for the most important issue, what percentage do you think named Israel?
I would say 1%, 2%,
yeah, it was 3%. It was two, right? So it's really kind of incredible that Americans themselves, as I always say, they have an opinion on everything. But right now, they're super focused on domestic policy, crime, immigration, inflation, healthcare, education, all of these things, climate change. And then down at the bottom is foreign policy. So I always used to have this fight in the States of the Union where Sandy Berger would accuse me of eliminating all this foreign policy stuff each time. And of course,
God rest Sandy's soul.
It wasn't me. It was Vox Populi, and we put a little. So that's why it was surprising, of course, that President Biden opened up with the Ukraine, because look, you know, there's support for the Ukraine. The dollar figure attached to the Ukraine is seen as high. There's more support actually for Israel, and the dollar figure still, you know, Americans are a little cheap at the moment, but still, you get about 54-55%. Favoring the funding to Israel, right? Some don't know, but you get a solid majority. But do Americans favor the Ukrainians over the Russians? Absolutely. Do Americans favor Israel over Hamas? Absolutely, right? Do they want to spend American money on it? Yes, but is really the answer, right?
So what's the but? What's the but?
But is, you know, there's a huge deficit. They're kind of saying, look, if you can't do the border at home, why are you doing the border? You know, why are you trying to protect the border, you know, over in Russia and the Ukraine? So there's a certain logic to them being frustrated with the current problems. But their hearts, so to speak, are in good places in terms of trying to stop both terrorism and Putin. And so, you know, the price tag, after all, the price tag is pretty high, asking for another $60 billion on top of what's been spent.
Right. But and that's not the end of it either, obviously. Right?
No. And it is interesting that we've developed in a situation in which the Democrats are more likely to favor funding for the Ukraine and the Republicans are more likely to favor funding for Israel. Now, whoever expected that would be the case?
Well, and, you know, people would always say the Republicans are the party of national security and the party of NATO, the party of strong defense. Why are they changing their tune on Ukraine all of a sudden?
Because of the strain, the America first strain. Why are we sorting out that conflict? Part of the territory is kind of naturally Russian anyway. Haven't we gone too far with this? Aren't we risking a world war? Oh, you can see the arguments, but they're not majority arguments. And the difference is a majority supports both causes. Majority supports Ukraine funding or close to it. But that price tag, they would be more supportive with a $30 billion price tag. And a solid majority supports the Israel funding. And remember, there's also a sense that why should we be not just the world's policeman, but why should we be the world's funder? Right.
Sure.
And so I think that's important. And, you know, it takes leadership in these issues. right? That has to outline the reasons why the national security interest, why this is important to world peace and security, what it really means to America to do these things. And obviously, since the president's earlier speech, we haven't had really, really much assertive leadership.
Do you think he did the job last night coming out? I mean, State of the Union, he came straight out with a national security issue, as you said, Ukraine, maybe surprising to some, dove into NATO, and then left Israel towards the end. But were you surprised he opened with Ukraine?
I was surprised he opened with Ukraine and that he split Israel from Ukraine.
Yeah.
When he did his original speech, he knew Ukraine wasn't popular. So he basically said, we're helping Israel, and then mumbled that we're also going to help the Ukraine.
Right.
Now, because this was really a Democratic convention speech and not at all a State of the Union, I think what he did was to separate the two. And then when it came to Israel, he had greatly changed his tune. He said, yeah, Hamas committed these horrible things. Yeah, Israel has a right of self-defense. But then he spent all of the time about aid to Hamas and this rather risky idea of building a port in Gaza, to which the Israelis are fine with. Go ahead, America, build a port, leave us out of it. But the notion that we're going to do that without putting, I guess we're not going to put boots on the ground. We're going to put boots in the water. It's kind of
we're going to have frogmen setting up the pier.
I mean, yeah. It was a little bit, I mean, we're getting some contractors. The Israelis are not going to do that one.
They're not building any piers in Gaza. That's clear.
And so he spent all his time. Obviously, he was playing to Michigan support. And obviously, the media has been playing up what I think is false and exaggerated polling in order to actually give him the impression that he had a political problem that was more important than helping Israel put out Hamas.
Tell me about that. Why do they think that they have such a political problem, and what's the reality?
Well, they think they have a problem. There are 100,000 voters in Michigan who voted uncommitted. Really meaningless. These voters are never voting for Donald Trump, who is right. Twice the Israel hawk. Are they going to stay home? And no, they are not going to stay home. It was an empty, meaningless threat. You call Michigan a swing state because the most important voters you need are the swing voters.
Right. These are Democratic voters. And as you point out and allude to, they came out for the primary and voted uncommitted. These are civically minded people who vote. They don't stay home.
Right. They stay home. They're involved. They wanted to register a protest. Fair enough. They were, let's see, there was 11% uncommitted against Obama. They were 13% uncommitted. You know, if they got 40%, I would have said, boy, this is really concerning. At 13%, considering all of the major elected officials who went out of their way to broadcast this and ask people to do it, I wouldn't have considered that really much of a protest. But then the press played it up like it's serious. His whole base is defecting. No, it's the swing voters who have defected, which is why he's down in virtually every poll against Trump. It's not there's maybe 1% Arab Muslim. There's maybe 2% Jewish. The actual voters within these communities is relatively small, even in Michigan.
Why do you think the swing voters are swinging to Trump right now?
They're swinging to Trump because economy, immigration, crime, and a general feeling that life was better under Trump. And when it comes to foreign policy, the real clash is, do the voters believe what Trump says, which is, these leaders, they feared me. And so they weren't going to take these provocative actions while I was president, because they would know that I would respond tough, in a tough manner. And Biden, how has Biden responded? And is it seen as a tough response? Well, we know that for years they were trying to get a deal with Iran. They dissed Saudi Arabia until maybe the last year. The Houthis, I mean, it is a little inconceivable to me that Houthis are sending anti-ship ballistic missiles at our ships, and which would normally be, as I recall, an act of war. And we have like, oh yeah, well, good thing we shot them down.
We've been talking about this a lot on this podcast. The Houthis don't have food, they don't have water, but they have missiles. No power, no food, no water, but they have missiles, and we're not taking decisive action.
We're not. So then obviously you can see when you come to America, America's attitude is, I don't want to pay for all this. And if I've got a president that prevents it from happening, that's cheapest, right? And if it happens, then I got to pay for it. Then who else is going to pay for it? I want the rest of the world to pay for it. So there's a lot, but I will say, but I did want to focus a little bit on this Israel polling.
Yeah, I mean, it's really it jumps out at you. Over 4 in 5 voters support Israel in the conflict with Hamas. Tell me about that.
Well, I ask a very simple and straightforward question. Are you more supportive of Israel or Hamas? Because that's what the conflict is. It's Israel
Correct.
versus Hamas. No, don't know. Pick one. It's like in World War II. You with America or you with Germany? Okay.
Right.
Now, the question that's asked in some of the other polls, Gallup and others, is, are you more supportive of the Israeli people, the Palestinian people, both or neither?
Which doesn't
Now,
really tell you much about the actual conflict.
no, and that poll will come out more favorable to Israel. More people will say I care about Israel. People will say I care about, a lot of people will say both. Because if I asked you, do you care about the American people, the German people, both? I mean, it's not the relevant question in a war. The relevant question is which side you sympathize with. And the fact that there are, say, 17% or so who sympathize with Hamas is a real number. And at one point, it was running about half the people 18 to 24. That seems to have diminished a little bit. I've seen no drop in support for Israel whatsoever. I thought there would be a drop, but as Israel, as these things dropped off the front page, there aren't pictures of Israel bombing Hamas every day. It
Right.
seems, if anything, Israel support has held. And then then I was really surprised the Wall Street Journal question was more like, well, echoing really what Biden said, began with, well, do you think Israel's been over the top? Well, I don't know what over the top is, but they're kind of prompting an answer. Over the top was not over the top or about right. So then they showed over the top 42. They didn't bother to add up the rest of the people who said not over the top. They left them in three separate categories. When
Okay.
you add the not over the, because there's like 20% that are even like they should be much more aggressive, right? The important question is about hostages,
Yes.
right? Right? Do you have a ceasefire if they don't release the hostages? And that's where we focus on, we focus on in our questions, right? Yes. And do you favor an unconditional ceasefire in the Hamas war that would leave everyone in place? Or do you think a ceasefire should happen only after the release of all hostages and Hamas is removed from power? Now that puts a real choice, right? And 67% say only when the hostages are released and removed from power.
So that's
And only
two
a
in three.
third.
That's 2 in 3 respondents to the poll say they would only support a ceasefire after Hamas releases all hostages and Hamas is removed from power.
Correct. And that is the relevant question for this situation. Now, among 18 to 24, 53% favor an unconditional ceasefire. Among 65 plus, 18%, right? So there is a generational difference. There is particularly an 18 to 24 difference. It bleeds up a little bit. But even those numbers are 50-50-ish, right?
So
There's no.
on the younger side, it's still above 50% supporting Israel, right? And or this is supporting
Yes.
ceasefire.
Yes. In the ceasefire, it was 53-47 unconditional. But really, that would be within the margin of error for that particular sample.
And then you had a finding that says 63% of voters continue to support Israel's ground invasion. And I believe as you categorize that by age, it was above 50% in the 18 to 24. And as you
Correct.
get older, the support for the ground invasion continues to increase up to 65 plus. Then it's, I think, around 70%, right?
Exactly. So, do you support Israel continuing its ground invasion to root out the final elements or oppose it because 1.2 million civilians have taken shelter and will be under significant risk of harm. So I put out the choice very clearly. I say that 1.2 million civilians, and you know what? People understand when you focus on Hamas, as is Israel's goal, that Hamas is a genocidal terrorist group.
Yes.
With the lowest favorability. I even do their favorability. Trust me, they're even less like than Putin, right?
Well, that's good. I can't imagine anyone likes them.
No, but there are young people who think that Hamas is the democracy in the Middle East.
That they're the justified ones.
So yes, they're within that half, within the half of young people. I did a lot of probing deep into that, and about half of the half is completely misinformed.
So something like 25% of the young people you surveyed are misinformed.
Yes, I'd say 25% are dedicated supporters of Hamas as part of their support of the Palestinian cause.
Okay.
And I'd say 25% of it, they thought that gay people did fine under Hamas, but not Israel. They were just totally, completely upside down on the reality, which doesn't surprise me. They're 18 to 24 on American college campuses getting their primary source of news from TikTok.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Why do you think this younger generation is feeling the way they're feeling?
Look, they don't have the 9/11 experience. They certainly don't have the 1948 experience, the 67 experience, the 73 experience. They don't have the experience I went through with President Clinton and Hillary when they tried to negotiate. And I think nothing turned Hillary more pro-Israel than the 2000 peace negotiations, in which she discovered, much to the surprise, and the president discovered as well, it didn't matter what you offered the Palestinian Authority. They had no ability to accept anything. They would be killed.
Yeah. So here we are today, and you're seeing these trends. What's the relevant question for our leaders right now when it comes to Israel?
Well, the relevant question really is, how are they going to balance the considerations between the genuine concern about Palestinians and those in Gaza, the need to wipe out Hamas, but also the need to deal with the other proxy forces that Iran has put into place? Clearly, the administration made a major mistake by taking their foot off the pedal on Iran for the first couple of years. They let Iran basically fund and stoke up, you know, the regional terror. And so rather than getting the next agreement in the Abraham Accords with Saudi Arabia, instead, Hamas was able to come in as an Iran proxy and destabilize the region. And so what's the makeup for that mistake? The makeup for that mistake is to give no quarter to Hamas whatsoever, which is where they were. Right.
Yeah.
And then domestic politics came in and the election season. And so now they've kind of hesitated a bit, and they're not giving the same level of support. I mean, to me, the most stunning thing was that he mentioned Hamas. He did not mention the funding for Israel.
Yeah.
Right. He only mentioned the funding. He only mentioned the funding for Ukraine, and he did not mention the growing problem of anti-Semitism.
President Biden did not.
Yes, and this has a lot of Jewish leaders rather unhappy today.
I'm sure, and there's got to be a lot of concern in that regard, because the Jewish community in America is seeing something of an existential crisis right now. Are you going to be doing any polling on that?
Well, I continue to do polling every month. We do different questions. Again, I did some polling on this whole notion of victim and oppressor class and whatnot. So among the 18 to 24, which is really where the issue is, 79% of them thought that white people were oppressors, and 67% of them thought Jews were oppressors.
Okay.
And so this kind of broad anti-Semitism that has been engendered with a false notion that Jews as a class should be seen as oppressors is behind a lot of what we see in the 18 to 24. But look, you get to people who are 65 who would have been anti-Vietnam War radicals, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they have seen enough in their lifetime with terrorism, with ISIS, with 9/11, with other conflicts with Israel, to have a very clear view, right, of the situation in the Mideast. And from a political basis, I think the left has been exaggerating the support, doing everything they can to frighten Biden off what genuinely has been a very strong pro-Israel record, so that he's acting more politically than out of policy. And every time he does that, people in Hamas, they have the internet.
Yeah. But his record is clearly strongly pro-Israel. And to date, I don't believe he said anything that counters that in any way. But here's the real question for me, okay? We see all these polls all the time that talk about how the American people are upset with Israel over prosecuting this war against Hamas. Why are we seeing such a disparity in these polls when the reality is, as you've shown in your polls, that the support for Israel is much more broad-based?
Because they don't ask the questions. They just ask the one question, sometimes two questions. Mm-hmm. I thought it was incredible. I think the Journal had a couple of questions, and they said, you know, who do you support more, Israeli people, Palestinian people, both? And then they said, oh, there's more support for Palestinian people. Well, it moved from like 27 to 30 something. I mean, it didn't really matter where it moved from. And then when I did a statistical t-test of the two samples that were half samples, it wasn't actually statistically significant.
Yeah.
Now the media looks for everything that's useful, but mostly if they would ask my question, if they would ask any of my questions, they would come out plus or minus 5 points, the same as I asked them, because that would be the margin of error. They do not ask the questions. They ask these fuzzy-wuzzy questions that are designed. Of course, people sympathize with Palestinian people. This is not a fight between the Palestinian people and the Israeli people.
I think that's the key, Mark. You know, if you most Americans, if you ask them, do you care and sympathize with Palestinian people? The answer overwhelmingly is yes. If you ask them, do you care and sympathize with the Israelis who were attacked on October 7th? I think overwhelmingly the answer is yes. When you put it in the terms that you put it, where it's Israel against Hamas, it is not Israel against the Palestinian people. That's the real question.
Right.
So where do we go from here? What's the next series of polls you're going to do in this space and foreign policy and national security? And
you know, I'm going to keep tracking. I mean, look, you know, it's interesting. Ukraine, Israel, Iran. We occasionally ask some questions on China. Mm-hmm. You know, America's kind of two minds on China. They
tell
like
me
the Chinese.
A little bit about that. Yeah.
Well, they like Chinese products.
Yep.
You know, half the people I know have iPhones made in China.
Right.
They would never take kind of like, they'd never throw their iPhone away because it was made in China. Right. But if I ask them about China, very negative attitudes about China and its government and human rights. And they think that China makes kind of, you know, dumps cheap products on the world to reduce labor prices here. They have pretty negative views on China, but they don't act on them.
You know, I always say that the one bipartisan value in Washington right now is it's neither party likes China very much. And I guess that's why.
Well, yes, but they don't like China. But interestingly, again, if you listen to Biden yesterday, his attitude was he was going to be a competitor, yeah, not a combatant with China.
Right.
And whereas I think President Trump took a more combative action and tone towards China. Now, China's, in the view of most people, China is stealing intellectual property. They have a litany of bad things that they think China is doing. And then at the same time, as I said, very little action, not that much discussion really or talk about it, because I think the focus is on Putin and the focus is on Hamas and Israel at this point. And people are worried about Taiwan. I mean, I believe I had a question not too long ago, should the U.S. militarily support Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion? And most people said yes.
Yeah.
So there's a very strong support for Taiwan. I think the real fear that people have with Biden is that is that if Russia moved ahead in the Ukraine and Hamas slash Iran moved ahead against Israel, will there be a third front? And is China waiting for a sign of weakness that they would go in here to take Taiwan?
Or is China looking at Russia's frozen conflict and stalemate in Ukraine and worrying that they could get bogged down in the same?
Well, I think that at first glance, it looked like Russia was paying a heavy price and it would be over and they'd never win. But Hamas leaders are still intact. Putin is still in charge. I think they're looking at there, and the Chinese think of themselves as about the long time frame, the long road. So most experts I talk to say they won't. But the question of public opinion is, there is a lot of support for that. There would be support for leadership to defend against. And can America protect itself from international wars with pacifist stance? Or does it take stronger, more frightening stances that are inherently more dangerous? And that's always been the tough question. And it certainly is a question that dominates what we see today. Usually in polls, Americans say, take the tough action, until you take the tough action. And then they say, what'd you do that for?
So it's, you can't win, I guess, right?
It is very hard for Americans to win, American presidents, to win in foreign policy in things that take more than a couple of weeks.
Wow. Well, those are words to keep in mind as we go forward over these next 8 months in looking at this election. Mark, thank you so much for sharing these insights from the Harvard Caps Harris poll, which is an excellent poll. I hope our listeners subscribe to Mark's email so they can get a copy of the monthly poll. I know I learn a lot from it every time. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, check out our larger suite of CSIS podcasts. From Into Africa, The Asia Chessboard, China Power, AIDS 2020, The Trade Guys, Smart Women, Smart Power, and more. You can listen to them all on major streaming platforms like iTunes and Spotify. Visit csis.org/podcasts to see our full catalog